The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Hey, we have made it to Friday. Great to have everybody here. Trying to figure out where we are. We have been out of the studio this week in Atlanta, but it's great to have you with us. And we begin. We'll recap Media Days. There is a media poll that's out. Some very interesting notes, and there's also some breaking news on the University of Tennessee. And there it is. Jeremy Pruitt and his staff, according to Ross Dellinger, paid $60,000 in inducements and funded visits during COVID dead period, according to an NCAA notice of allegations obtained by Sports Illustrated. We'll have more on that. Also, his wife seemed to be involved for $12,000 in cash, arranged fishing trips, nail station visits. All pretty minor stuff in the current world that we live in, but who knows with the NCAA. We'll try to get some more context on that in a few minutes. Meanwhile, college football can't be killed, really, but it can be changed for the worse. That's the thoughts of Kevin Clark, who will join us a little bit later. Bill Hancock joins us. He's the executive director of the CFP, but it's mostly about the calls. And by the way, Alabama was picked to win the SEC. I know that sounds like a shocking story. And did I read that correctly, Danny, that Vanderbilt got one vote in the SEC East? I think that's great, but I think it's a good idea maybe for Vanderbilt to win a conference game first before they start getting first place votes. We will not moralize on the stupidity of somebody voting that, whether they should have a vote or not. I think it's self-explanatory. Let's get to your phone calls as well at 855-242-7285. I've heard the complaints. Yes, we were in Atlanta. Media Days is one of the most compressed weeks of the year for the reason that there are so many opportunities to talk to so many different people, whether it's players, whether it's coaches, whether it's people that cover the game, whether it's administrators, like yesterday when we began the show with Jimbo Fisher and had Commissioner Sankey on and student reporters. So it's just a tough day. It's a tough week, I should say, to spend a lot of time with callers. And I was talking to Danny Brams before the show, and he feels very strongly, and I agree, that we should, for the most part, turn the show over to you today as a way to end a long but important week here. So let's do that without further ado. Isn't that the cliche they always say? Dave begins us from Missouri. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi, Paul. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Peggy and I enjoyed your coverage of Media Days.
Thank you.
We did. Every bit of it we did. And you even shared stories, too. You know, like you're looking at magazines while your wife was grocery shopping.
Yeah. That's true.
That's funny, because I used to do the same thing. You know, she can't shop anymore. But for me, when I hit the magazine rack, it was Maxim's. Now, I don't know what you used to look
at. I remember that. Yeah, and by the way, I don't want anybody – I have been grocery shopping before. I used to live alone before I got married. I don't want to act like I don't know, you know, the front door of the grocery store. But when we go together on the weekends, I get out of the way. She likes the grocery shop. I don't want to I just kind of wander around and see what I can find.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with that. People might recognize you if you started, you know, going down the aisles with her, you know. And, well, they would commend you, I'm sure. But anyway, I just want to tell you, we really enjoyed it. And it's been a long time since I talked to you, you know, since the river and stuff.
Right.
But we loved it. I just wanted you to know
that.
Well,
Dave, thank you. Best to Peggy, and thanks for the kind comments. And we missed every one as well. And again, we're updated. I mean, the Tennessee story is breaking as we are talking to you. So I'm going to be doing a lot of looking down, trying to give you the latest. Basically, it's 18 level one NCAA violations These are allegations. They have not been convicted of anything. That's a lot, but I think you have to take it in context. The notice alleges 32 instances of nearly $60,000 in cash. That's basically a bad NIL deal for an offensive lineman these days. The NCAA said Tennessee showed exemplary cooperation. That's a code word. They always do that. Remember, Tennessee fired him. They got rid of almost everybody on that staff. It would be interesting to see how this reflects on one of the biggest names in Tennessee history, Philip Fulmer. Remember, Philip Fulmer ascended to the AD's position after the overthrow of, what's his name? I think it was John Curran. I think that was his name when he was the AD there. He was about to hire Mike Leach and the president, John Curry. Yeah, he's at Wake Forest now. Yeah, he was one of the top ADs in college sports last year, and I've already forgotten his name. But ultimately, Philip got the job, and he hired Jeremy Pruitt, by the way, over Mel Tucker. And it was a disaster. Let's just cut right to the chase. So Tennessee has now confirmed the receipt of the notice of allegations. Like, really? We already know it. But you know what this is really interesting is, and I have not heard any of this, but I was told by somebody in Atlanta that Jeremy Pruitt was showing up on podcasts. He was clearly trying to, you know, win his good name back. It's well known that Saban loves him, and so do other people. He's an outstanding defensive coordinator. But you would have to think the odds of him getting back into college football now are going to be a rather steep climb. Whatever happened to Pruitt's attorney? Remember the guy threatening all these massive lawsuits? He was going to burn the house down. Well, it looks like Jeremy Pruitt's house is the one in jeopardy at the moment. Andre is in the ATL, and you are on the air. Hello, Andre.
Coach Paul Feinbaum. Look, Coach, what do you think? Should the SEC Media Day be in Atlanta permanently, or they should go back to Hoover?
They're not going. They're going to Nashville next year. I'll say this. I think the SEC Media Days should be flexible. You know, by the way, I don't think the fans really care where it is.
Right.
There was a reason why I was in Birmingham for so long, because there were so many people in Alabama that it was an easy trip. And remember, the SEC likes the fact that when Nick Saban walked in, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people clamoring for him. I mean,
were you in the crowd, Coach? Were you?
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
Crowd?
Yeah, but Andre, think about this: as the SEC got bigger, they like that image on ESPN as opposed to the ACC media days, where there's like three people outside.
Hey, Coach, look, when you whispered in the commissioner's ear yesterday and asked him about North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, and Miami, what did he say, Coach?
He said that that's a done deal. It should be announced before the end of the show. I think that's on hold right now until Notre Dame decides what it wants to do. Once Notre Dame makes a determination, either way, going to affect everything else. But I firmly believe, and I know the ACC commissioner gets paid seven figures to get up there and say nonsensical things like, we have the best conference in the country. Did you hear him say that yesterday?
Well, Coach, everybody, it's not what the commissioner says. What did the NFL say? What did the national championship say? What does recruiting say? You know, ESPN asked Bryce Young. They say, you're from Southern California. Why are you going to the SEC? He said, because it's the best, and I want to test myself against the best. There it is, Coach. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, there's no question. And I think the ACC is the league really on the clock right now. And they have to figure it out, because Clemson wants out of there. Florida State wants out of there. North Carolina is probably looking. Virginia Tech, Miami are looking around. I mean, that was a sad party in Charlotte on Wednesday and Thursday. really sad. We will take a break. Pete Thamel joining us a little bit later on. Bill Hancock coming up. We have a long way to go. We'll give you an update on the Tennessee news and your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
So, a lot of things happening this week. Yesterday, the Kirby Smart news. Today, the long-awaited preview of what could happen to the University of Tennessee in the aftermath of Jeremy Pruitt. They have confirmed the receipt of a letter of notification. Pete Thamel joining us, giving us the latest. Pete, thanks so much. Great to have you with us earlier in the week. So what do we know about the UT situation?
Well, Paul, the notice of allegations arrived, at least the release of the notice of allegations came, not surprisingly, late on a summer Friday. And it is certainly the type of news that Tennessee's administration would want to bury. The headline, Paul, is that there are 18 level one NCAA violations. And I've done this for a long time, Paul. I don't know if I've ever seen 18 violations. I surely have not seen 18 level one. And I just think it speaks not only to the extent of the alleged cheating during Jeremy Pruitt's time at Tennessee, but it just speaks to how blatant and sloppy he was. NCAA investigators, Paul, I think listeners of your show would probably agree, are not exactly the most proficient at their job. So the fact that there were 18 different allegations of getting caught, and Jeremy Pruitt's wife, Casey, is prominently involved in this. There's a slew of former assistants involved. And look, Jeremy Pruitt's reputation while he was there and while Tennessee started to have some success on the recruiting trail was that he was sloppy, like that he wasn't he wasn't keeping things tight. And certainly, again, 18 of these would indicate that, there's going to be some significant trouble.
Pete, I realize we're talking about the reality, and that's what the allegations are. The spin is already big deal. Who cares? It's the age of NIL, and nothing's going to happen. I realize that's not your responsibility. Your responsibility is to report on what you know. But how do you juxtapose any allegation these days in the era of NIL, especially when they have a collective up there that is one of the biggest in the country, and the reports are that a quarterback's already or is in the process of making millions of dollars before he even gets on campus?
Yeah, Paul, it's an interesting question because I can't sit here with a straight face and say if they're found guilty of all these 18 that Tennessee football itself will be significantly punished. What we're seeing is a shift or an attempt at a shift, and certainly Tennessee AD Danny White has been vocal about this publicly, to not punish the current student-athletes who obviously weren't involved, a vast majority of them, in any of these alleged violations, and that the punishments shift more towards Jeremy Pruitt and the staff members who sort of bungled their way through that operation for a couple of years. And so I've said this many times on your show, Paul, and I'll probably say it many more. When these things happen, everyone wants to know immediately what's the punishment going to be. And there is no way to ever predict what the NCAA is going to do. They actually are making it up as they go along, and they are shifting and twisting and turning. And, you know, look back to we often reference on your show, Paul, the federal basketball investigation, which is just months from its 5-year anniversary with little clarity and little vigorous punishment that has been associated with that. You know, I did talk to one lawyer who kind of trades in these cases earlier today, just to get some context about 18 level one violations. And he said it probably wasn't an accident that they listed them that way, because sometimes you can do one allegation with like four subsets and whatever. He thought this was the NCAA trying to make a point. And if you look at it a little bit deeper, there's obviously now this new IARP that came about through the largely failed Condoleezza Rice delegation to try to clean up basketball and to try to better punish things. And the IARP has emerged so far as an abject failure and is continuing to show that. So that there's almost like a rivalry now between the NCAA's regular enforcement and the IARP to see who can do their job better. So the IARP essentially outsourced a lot of what the NCAA enforcement office had done. So that is more jargon than any of your listeners probably want driving to the beach on a Friday afternoon. But it is endlessly complicated and rarely fair in the world of NCAA justice.
Yeah, and it's important to point out, Pete, that these allegations occurred before NIL went into effect. So you can spin it any way you want about so what, big deal. But it's still pretty astonishing. I was about to say the stupidity of Jeremy Pruitt, but then again, I think that's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Come on, Paul. I do think that the word blatant comes to mind. Brazen probably comes to mind. You think about some of the stuff that Will Wade was alleged to do at LSU. This may not have the same dollar figures next to it, but it was the portrait painted in the 51-page document is one of clear, collective, orchestrated cheating. A lot of, again, people may poo-poo COVID, but there was certainly clear restrictions on visits that appear to be just like massively ignored throughout all this, which is, again, just another blatant violation of rules. We saw similar allegations emerge at Arizona State within the last couple years, where visitors weren't allowed on campus, and there were visitors on campus, and there was a way to pay for visitors. We had to pay for visitors to eat. So clearly, the Pruitt operation was frayed enough where people sang, because plenty of people sang for this, because the level of detail to the restaurants and the amount paid and the role of his wife, which will probably be the legacy in this, is that he enlisted his wife to be one of the bag people for this operation. But yeah, brazen and sloppy is what really this comes down to.
Yeah, and I think we all want our wife to be all in on our careers, and this that's the most positive thing we can say about Jeremy Pruitt. A couple of more questions, Pete. I know you got a lot going on. So Jeremy Pruitt recently has done some podcasts. I have not heard them, but I was talking to somebody in Atlanta, and I asked, what's the meaning of Jeremy Pruitt going on local podcasts around the South? And the person said he's trying to get back into coaching. This is his redemption tour. We don't know where the NCAA will go with this, but your best guess on where Jeremy Pruitt stands in getting a coaching job in the future in college athletics?
Well, I've learned after watching Dave Bliss again coach in college, Paul, to never say you can never come back. Hugh Freeze is now a vibrant coach at Liberty. You can find forgiveness if wins follow. That's an old theme in college athletics. But I do think with the way the NCAA has sort of tried to rework some of their punishment structure, that if anyone is going to be in the crosshairs of NCAA punishment, any singular person, it's going to be Jeremy Pruitt. And I have a feeling, just the way from looking through the document today and the way things were written, that he is going to be punished for a very long time. I don't know about a lifetime ban or anything like that, but just the way it's structured and the way they want things to go and how long they've taken, the extent they've taken to verbalize, like in the NC State case, that they don't want to punish current student athletes who didn't have anything to do with it, I really feel like Jeremy Pruitt could end up with a significant punishment. But again, I want to stress, Paul, that's a guess, because nobody can ever predict what the NCAA is going to do. But just from the way things were read in that case and the way the case is sort of tailored and the allegations were documented, that would be the safest presumption off of a read of the notice of allegation.
Of course, Jeremy Pruitt went 16-19 at Tennessee. His final year, he was 3-7, all seven losses coming by double digits. The final question has less to do with the NCAA, but more to do with legacy. Pete, he was hired by Philip Fulmer, who chose Jeremy Pruitt over two other candidates, one of them being Mel Tucker, who is now one of the richest coaches in college football at Michigan State. What is the news today going to mean toward the lasting legacy of Philip Fulmer, at least as the athletic director at the University of Tennessee?
Well, I think you could probably say three guys, Paul, because there was the Greg Schiano coup that got John Curry run, and then there was obviously Mike Leach, who Curry was out seeing before he went. And, you know, you can have opinions about all those guys, but boy, are they miles.
Yeah, that was part one. I was only talking about the Fulmer part. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, they're some pretty good candidates to go coach at Tennessee. And they whiffed in epic ways on that. But, you know, I've written at other publications my feelings on Phil Fulmer, the Phil Fulmer hire, and then how badly and poorly Phil Fulmer managed every single aspect of his athletic directorship at Tennessee. And I think this is the fitting coda of one of the worst athletic director tenures in the history of college athletics.
We'll leave it at that, because there's really nothing left to add after that final opinion. Pete, many, many thanks. We appreciate all your help this week. It was invaluable, and we wish you well. And I was about to say get some rest, but that's a stupid thing to say to you.
Summer Fridays, Paul. Most people get them off. We have to do extra work in college athletics.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, great to see you in Atlanta, Paul. Appreciate your time.
You got Pete Thamel talking about the Pruitt era, and you're right. They could have had Greg Schiano, but the mob decided he wasn't good enough for Tennessee, and then the chancellor decided no one else was either, and they ended up finally choosing Pruitt over Mel Tucker, and Kevin Steele was the other candidate, the former University of Tennessee player who is now at Miami. We'll take a short break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome you back, and what a real treat in our studio, Bill Hancock, of course, who runs the college football playoff. We talk to you on a double box or on a phone line so often during the season, just lobbing softballs to you about why things have gone the way they do. So it's really cool to have you sitting here with us.
Wait, softballs? I don't remember any softballs.
My memory is fading on me at this point in my life. Maybe it could be the week in Atlanta.
Well, it is good to see you in person. Glad to be here. Glad to get a look at the studio. It's beautiful.
Thank you very much. It came up quite often this week in interviews with Commissioner Sankey and others about where we are with the CFP. And I bring that up because it was just about a year and a month ago that we had a conversation with you. You were in Kansas City at a barbecue restaurant. And it was, Bill, it was one of the happiest days I think we have ever had on this program. We were going to get a 12-team playoff.
Oh, man. You know, the what happened with that was it was interesting. We did have a proposal, mm-hmm. and it was a proposal for folks on campus to consider. And I think there was a fair amount of optimism, probably misplaced, because it had to be unanimous by all the conferences. Right. And if we had sat back that day, you and I, and said, well, now, wait a minute, can we get unanimous support from all the conferences for this? We probably would have said, don't think it's going to happen. It didn't happen, of course, for that. But it won't be long till we're back at the table trying to figure out what to do. And I'm optimistic that my bosses are going to do the right thing for college football.
Yeah, and let me make it clear. This is not a congressional committee trying to hold you accountable, because I think we all know what happened and it's been well documented and reported. I think the real question is, where is the next move? And because the rest of college sports is so is in such an upheaval right now, how does that affect what you're doing?
I think we need stability in college sports as much as anything. And I think deciding about the next CFP format will lend some stability. So I'm hoping we can get it done sooner rather than later.
So when is the next moment for all of us geeks to bookmark, so we know when to I won't be going, but our colleagues will. I much prefer staying here than hanging out in hotel lobbies. That was the early part of my career. So when is the next time that substantive conversation will take place?
The commissioners meet quarterly, and the next quarterly meeting is in September. Don't send anybody yet, because I don't know what will be the outcome of that meeting. We got a lot done. We learned a lot from the debates over the last year that I think we'll be able to take into the next conversation.
If we take this back 6 months, that cold day in Indianapolis, I felt, Bill, was really a bad day for college sports. And I know you're the eternal optimist, but you know, some of the speeches that we heard coming out of there from Bob Bowlesby and Commissioner Sankey joined us were rather disappointing. And I bring that up because all I hear from people in not in your position, because you're one who tries to bring people together, but in positions of commissioners, is we're collaborative, we're congenial, and collegial, I should say. Congenial is not a word that probably would be best used, but I didn't see that a lot of times during COVID, and I certainly didn't see it during the episode that we're referring to.
So yeah, that day was not a happy day. Then we had a great championship game that night, so that made the day happier. But there was some disappointment on both sides. But they did agree to come back and keep talking about it, let things settle a little bit, let everybody take a deep breath. And we're about to be finished with that deep breath time, and it's going to be time to start talking again.
But on the backdrop of all that, we're seeing some of those former allies who were steadfast against the particular model that was being discussed. There's now been some cracks in that armor. So I applaud your optimism, but I just don't understand it. And I know that if you start speaking in a depressive state, it's probably going to send shockwaves through the sport. So I'll take that mantle. But I am particularly curious how you are able to hold on to such optimism when that was a pretty dark day. And even Commissioner Sankey still referred to it Monday, as you well know, you were there.
Yeah, as I said, that was a dark day for lots of people. But the people who weren't ready to expand at that time, I think have had more time to think about it, more time to try to get their agendas forward. And if you listen to all the commissioners, everyone says they want the CFP to expand. Now, what doesn't get said is, but we need these terms along with it. So, yeah, I have to be optimistic. I think we'll have a new CFP. You know, Paul, it's not unanimous among football fans to expand. A lot of people think this four works, and it does work. But can we do better for college football? I think we can.
So what, now that this Rose Bowl situation is somewhat up in the air because of what has happened with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, does that make it a little bit easier? Because that seemed, you've heard me say this. I mean, I always felt like everything else took a back seat to a game at 4 o'clock on New Year's Day, as beautiful as it is. And we've all loved going, but I'm ready to move on to see a playoff expanded as opposed to that game being more important than the biggest game of the year.
Yep, I get that. And I have not heard from the conferences or the Rose Bowl about that since what happened 2 weeks ago. I think we're just going to have to sit back and see.
Would you agree, though, that that has been a stumbling block for some people?
Every of the commissioners who didn't want to do it at the time, that they all had a different thing that was concerning for them. You read about all this. Big Ten wanted automatic qualification. ACC wanted to be real careful about it and do what's best for the student athletes. Well, who doesn't want that? And the Pac-12 wanted to make sure that the Rose Bowl had a significant part of this. It's a matter of going to the table, rolling up their sleeves, and negotiating and having give and take, just like we did back in 2012 when we created the playoff, when Jim Delaney gave a little bit, Mike Slive gave a little bit, and we came out with what we came out with.
But, Bill, I wonder, though, and you talked about two people that we both would agree are titans in this industry, and I'll never forget Commissioner Delaney grabbed me after Mike's funeral and said, "I've heard you say that we weren't good friends and we were bitter enemies, and that's not true. We actually worked things out. We just didn't let anybody know it because we didn't want to ruin our reputations by being friends." You understand that better than anybody. But I wonder, though, with this current group, because it's a new era of commissioners.
I did Final Four for 16 years, and now I've done this for 18 years, and this is the most turnover at one time that I've seen among the leaders. That's not to say they won't get together. That's not to say they won't understand. But being a conference commissioner is very difficult, and you don't learn it overnight.
You mentioned the AQ. That's the automatic qualifier. I think it's well known on this network how the SEC feels about that, and Greg Sankey. I think it seems to me he'll die on that hill. So how do you ameliorate that situation?
Keep talking. Roll up your sleeves and keep talking and say, "I can do this. Can you do this?" "Well, yeah, I can do some of that, but can you do the rest?" That's what it took last time, and that's what it's going to take. Just good old-fashioned horse trading and negotiating.
So let me ask you this. As you drove into our building, you probably couldn't miss the ESPN sign outside. ESPN has the contract to the CFP, as it has been well reported lately. What happens next with that, and is it more likely that we see two networks, Fox and ESPN, sharing an expanded playoff?
Well, first of all, I did not see an ESPN sign, and I almost thought this was, you know, like Joe's Barbecue or something happening.
Well,
here
we do have a barbecue restaurant in the back to try to earn a little money with Disney's earnings down, of course.
Well, I hope it's Carolina Barbecue and not like Texas Barbecue. Anyway, we don't need to go.
You know, that's a debate that will get you into a pushing match at a local barbecue. And I don't understand it because I'm from Memphis, and we all know where the best barbecue's from.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's a big question, though.
There is. If there's unanimity among the commissioners on anything, it is that we need to talk to more networks next time. We're very happy with what we're getting from ESPN. They treat our game like the Super Bowl, and we could not be happier. But is it time with more games, potentially, to at least talk to another network or a couple of networks about how this can be? You know, we're going to have 11 games next time if it's a 12-team tournament, and that's a lot of tonnage. For an event like this, whereas now there's six games at best if you count the contract bowls. So long answer to say, yeah, I think we'll be talking to more than one network. Whether we wind up with more than one, I don't know.
Well, Bill, every time you're on, the Peanut Gallery has its thoughts, and I don't care what they say. I've always found you to be the most sincere person involved in intercollegiate athletics. I always remain frustrated by your answers, but I do understand why, because it finally dawned on me that you have to represent the group that works with you. This is not your opinion, is it?
Well, I have opinions. I'm allowed to have opinions, but I don't have a vote, and that's okay. And I have the best job in sports. No, second best to you.
I appreciate that, and I probably should take a cue from you to be more diplomatic in the future.
Hey, we always have fun doing this, and I know we'll be talking after the selection committee meets, which won't be too long from now.
That is great. Now, of all the things that happened this week, the greatest result of this long week and next week is that the season is around the corner.
Amen.
So. You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And welcome back. As we continue getting some reaction to that and talking about the Tennessee situation, the SEC media days, the media poll, which of course had Alabama winning, Georgia, the representative from the West. We'll go through all of that as the show moves on. Pat is up in Georgia. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much. I think I've listened to at least 30 hours of the 40-plus hours that's been on the SEC network this year. So I'm glad it's Friday afternoon. And this is not a caller's week for your show. You've made good attempts to take calls. You took one of my calls on Monday. But this is a week for callers to listen and form opinions and have material for you next week. And the interviews and everything was very much informing. I was very much impressed by Mr. Hancock's interview. I got a very good impression of him. I my impression rose, and you asked him some tough questions.
Well, it's awkward for this reason, Pat. He is someone that I know well. I've had countless private conversations with him. But he also understands the medium. And I really think that was an extraordinary conversation by Bill, because you have to listen to the answers, and they're usually nuanced. But I thought that was more sobering than usual, and I appreciated that.
Well, I think that's probably what I picked up on, and you expressed it much better than I could. Let me ask you a question. Is it tough for you personally to cover Tennessee, especially when it is apparently as bad as it is?
Pat, I'm going to try to make this sound as simple as I can. No. For this reason, this is what we all do here. I'm not an athlete. I didn't play for Tennessee. I'm not carrying that. And by the way, it drives me crazy when athletes bring that to the desk. When you're hired as an analyst for a major network, leave your school colors home, okay? And that goes for the broadcasters as well. It's fun to joke about. It's fun to talk about when you're on campus every once in a while But on a serious story, the viewer should not have any earthly idea where the host of a program went to school. And in my case, it doesn't matter whether it's Tennessee or Alabama or anyone else. We view it all the same way.
Well, one more thought. Do people on panels, and this is whether it's SEC or ESPN or Fox or whatever, analysts on panels, do they remember at some point that when they're all talking at the same time over each other on purpose, that if you're
Pat,
viewing
if I could
it on
jump
the
in
TV,
here because we're up against a break, but let me answer that, and I'm sure I'll be chastised by my bosses. But that is not their problem. You know whose problem that is? That's the person in their ear. There's a producer in every control room for every one of those conversations, and when they don't stop those people from talking, they are the ones who are derelict in their duty.
I'm glad to hear that. Thanks for taking the call.
Now, there are a few analysts who talk regardless of what the producers and directors are saying, I might add.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.